Welcome to Cup the Bull, an insightful podcast which addresses the news of the day and the cultural issues plaguing our society, bringing logic and context to these topics and discussing solutions too real for mainstream pundits. Now, here are your hosts, Charles Love, Shamika Michelle, and Wilfred Riley.
Hello and welcome to Cut the Bull. I am Charles Love alongside my co-host Shamika Michelle. Wilfred Riley will be here shortly. And our guest this week is Kurt Schlichter. He is the senior columnist at Town Hall, trial lawyer, retired Army colonel, and the author of the new book, We'll Be Back, The Fall and Rise, Not Rise and Fall of America. Kurt, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, it is great to have you, and the book was good, and we're going to talk about that and all things America in this quick shot here. But I guess we should start by talking about, you say we'll be back. That kind of leads us to believe that we're not, we're a shadow of our former selves, and we have taken a tumble. So what place, how do you rank where we are compared to where we were?
Look, I think if you look back to the 80s or the 90s, on by every reasonable measure, this was a better country. People were happier. People were moving forward. People were, perfect country? Of course not. Nothing that human beings do is ever perfect. But we are moving in the right direction. And we are definitely moving in the wrong direction now. We are absolutely moving in the wrong direction. Hatred is being legitimized. The norms that govern how we relate politics are being broken. For instance, yesterday, the president, just because he feels like it, decides he's going to somehow eliminate $10,000 of debt for a small portion of the American people, make everyone else pay for it. Now, if you want to do something like that, there's a way to. You go pass a law. But he didn't do that, and he's relying on kind of some legal tricks to make it so it can't be reviewed or challenged. That's just bad stuff. If we're not going to rely on our norms, if we're not going to rely on the Constitution, what do we have? We have the rule of power. And anybody who's gone to high school understands what the rule of power looks like. The biggest, meanest person rules. Mm-hmm. And I'm in the Army. I've been to ugly places. I don't particularly want to live like that. I'm not afraid of it. I'm a trained soldier. I don't see myself getting pushed around. But there are a lot of other people who, will not prosper in that situation. The thing is, a lot of people pushing this are not people who would really survive in a place where power is the currency. Mm-hmm. Okay. The rules are not there to protect, tough people. They're there to protect weak people, because most people are weak. And I'm not saying that in a bad way. Mm-hmm. You're not a bad person if you're, 5'5" and 120 pounds. That doesn't make you a bad person. But it makes you a person who, if they see a guy who's 6'3" and 230 pounds, if you don't have rules, the 6'3" guy with 230 pounds is going to be ruling.
Right.
So I think we've thrown away so many good things. I've had a chance to live all over the world, and I've seen a lot of ugliness. And, the idea that people want to throw away what we have made here is crazy to me. But they're doing it for the short-term gain. They think, I'm going to get a little advantage here. But they don't realize that the status quo is not static. Right. It changes. And when you change the rules, you change them for everyone, whether you like it or not.
Right.
I just think I think we've worked ourselves into a really dumb and dangerous place where we frittered away the greatest opportunity for human freedom in human history. It was right here. And we were on the way to doing that. And we took a detour.
Right.
And I think we're gonna find our way. I desperately want us to find our way. Mm-hmm. But not everybody agrees with me.
Well, I think that you make a good point in that. And I think the reason so many people just blindly sign off on these things are, whether you agree with them or not, people are crafty in the way they do these things, right? So you talk about, you know, we got some time so we can get back to the book, but you mentioned some things like the student loan thing. So you have two groups of people who agree with it. You have the people who just say, hey, I'm going to get something from it. And that's just human nature. If I'm going to get $10,000, why wouldn't I be like, that's cool. I don't care about what the legal particulars are.
Yeah, that's true. Check. No, that's okay.
And then the other side are thinking that, well, we are going to do this thing. You talk about the weak and needing to be protected, but we will never be in that 5'5", 120-pound position. They think they won't be in that position. So we'll do this, right? Which is bigger than, we get people arguing about whether they agree with things or not. That shouldn't matter. The thing is, like you say, there's a principle and there are traditions, and we have norms for a reason. And so what I've been arguing about, like, my biggest problem with the country is the unelected bureaucrats. So what happens is, your guy gets power. You don't really care how he got it. You're like, yay, my side's got power. We're going to do this. So no one ever, the executive, Congress, no one ever gives up their power. So what they do is they say, hey, we got this new power. That guy loses. The other side comes in. Now we scream about it when we were cheering before. That person's, you know, not only using that power, but they add more. They push further. And then we just keep going. So now we look back and it's like, I thought we used to write laws to get stuff done. Now it's just battling executive orders. And, you know, we just keep changing, you know, what the priority is. So I think that that's kind of why it happens. It doesn't make it okay, but I don't see
it. But it's human nature.
Right.
I mean, look, there's two things you can do if somebody's threatening you and somebody's trying to force you to do something. You can give in, or you can take a swing. And I think people were not really used to people not playing by the rules. So they're kind of like surprised, and they think it's like a temporary mistake. Oh, well, this was bad, but we'll fix that and we'll get back to normal. Mm-hmm. And after a while, people have thought, you know, I don't see us getting back to normal. So I guess option two is on the table. I'm going to take a swing.
Right.
You know, look, America doesn't elect a guy like Donald Trump because they're happy with how things are going. All right, I like Trump personally. He's an imperfect person. I think he did some good things. I think he had some good ideas. I think he had some problems. But, I mean, this was a liberal real estate developer who had been a Democrat for a while from New York. His personality was not everybody's cup of tea. Mm-hmm. But I mean, they chose him. America chose him over Hillary Clinton, who was the best, the smartest woman in the world. She was what our rulers think of as the quintessential one of them. And she was totally rejected in favor of this, you know, TV loudmouth. And I mean that in a good way. I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but come on. America chose Donald Trump. 10 years ago, someone, if you had said to me, America is going to elect Donald Trump president, I would have put you in a straitjacket and taken you to a loony bin.
Right.
But we did. And that really, that says less about Donald Trump and us than about the people who were running things. And I mean them in both parties.
Right. So Shamika, what do you think both about what normal people think about, like, since he mentioned this new student loan forgiveness, like what do you think about the people, what do you hear from people who say, well, like I said, the people just say, I'm going to get something for it. And then what you think, like you said, brought on this unorthodox guy over, if you, the best way to put it, Kurt, is the way they actually put it. No person, this made me laugh, no person has ever been more qualified for president than Hillary Clinton. Right. So not somebody who was Secretary of War, Secretary of State, you know, not nobody in history. She was the most qualified person ever to run for president.
Yeah, well, on paper, she, you know, she'd been a senator. She'd been Secretary of State. OK. I mean, you just take away the fact she's a horrible, corrupt leftist lunatic. Yeah. I mean, I guess on paper she was OK. And we rejected her. We said no. We're going to get this guy who was on The Apprentice. How bad do you have to be if you're rejected for the guy who was on The Apprentice? And again, I like Trump, but I certainly didn't think he was going to be a good president.
Right.
I didn't think he was going to do what he promised to do.
Right. Shamika. Yeah.
How bad do you have to be to get snubbed by a chubby intern? You know.
yeah. I got kicked off of CNN for saying essentially the same thing. Don Lemon was very upset with me when I said Bill Clinton used his intern like a humidor and Hillary covered it up. Wow. He threw me off. See it. I haven't been on CNN in 7 years because of that.
Oh my God. They
just fine with me. Yeah. I know, right?
I'm sure. Yeah, you know, as far as the loans are concerned, I've heard a lot of people cheering. And for me, I don't have a problem with loan forgiveness simply because I know a lot of people that would benefit from it. My problem, though, is the burden falling on the taxpayers. Like, if you want some type of forgiveness, go to the universities, in my opinion. Yeah. Those are the ones that are overcharging for this blue hair indoctrination. That's where the money should be coming from. So that's the issue that I have with it. And I'm not surprised that Biden would actually just do this without trying to pass any laws because, and this is the best description that I've seen thus far. Don Jr. put up a meme and it's a man with no pants on. And there's a jar of peanut butter on the dresser and a dog standing in front of
the man. I don't
like
where this is going.
With his tongue out. And so the you have the voters, you have the peanut butter, which is the student loan forgiveness, and the dogs. That's the millennials. That's the best description that I've seen of what's happening here, because that's the reason why they did it. You know, that's the reason why they did it, to win these millennial votes that they feel like, you know, let's get these people out to the polls. Let's give them something. And that's how you always win people over.
But you say something important, and Kirk touches on it in the book. And I tweeted something about this today. I don't even get in the middle of that. You want to help people, whatever. But I'm a solutions guy. And you're doing nothing about what caused the problem. So you give people money. You're still giving the loans. Mm-hmm. Tuition's still overpriced. Right. And I said something, you know, just a lot. I'm not saying this is the answer. I'm throwing ideas out there. And one of them, I said, well, how, and Kurt actually put it in the book. I said, well, why don't you just, I don't know, incentivize these universities to make sure that people are placed in the right roles and they graduate. So if I get a $30,000 loan, and you put me in women's Elizabethan, you know, jiu-jitsu from right, and I can't get a job, or I drop out because you didn't place me and you didn't incentivize, you didn't care whether I went to class. Sleep in.
Right? Yeah, okay.
So university, you're on the hook for 15 of his 30 grand. Now you multiply that by all the students, and you think if they're there, they will be at the club, they'll be at the dorm. Like, Bob, you need to go to class.
Right.
Suddenly they become much more interested. But you know, if somebody says, "I'm going to give you free money to buy, you know, apples," you know, the price of apples is going up to match the amount of free money they're getting. It just is. I mean, that's just how it works. I mean, I charge what the market will bear as a lawyer and as a writer.
Right.
You know. If they'll pay me $100, I'm not going to ask for 50. I'm going to ask for 100 because that's what I'm worth.
Right.
And if these guys are running around with, you know, you get $10,000 in loans. My tuition's $9,999.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's just everybody knows this. This is See, the thing is that I think we got a lot of smart people, but I don't think we have a lot of wise people.
True.
Right.
I know
a lot of people who are smart. They got all degrees and they're all on their. You know, they're very, very, very smart people. And I know a lot of wise people who've never, you know, spent a day in college or grad school or anything, but they understand about human nature. You know, they understand right and wrong.
Right.
They understand how things actually work. And I'd like to get back. I'd like to start having a culture that appreciates wisdom, you know, because we got a lot of people with no experience, no background, who think that they, because they have a really sharp memory, a lot of these guys have a really sharp memory. They read a book, they remember what's in it, but do they understand what's in it? And I don't think our culture rewards that. I think, I think it does the opposite. And I don't think that's not a healthy culture.
Right. Well, you open your book. Back to your book. We'll be back. You open the book, which is important, talking about societies and the pinnacle, and you're thinking back when you're in the military of what was probably America at its height. But the important piece that to it, and you give some, you put in some wonderful, you know, history. You talk about, you know, Rome. You talk about Hannibal. You talk about things that have happened in the past. You talk about different empires. And what's important to note there is we have this hubris as Americans, right? And it's funny, to the lowest, to the person who's struggling financially or whatever, they may say, America's unfair and I'm poor, but they still have a glimmer of America's not that person. They see India, they see these other countries and say, you know, we're a high country. So we never think about the fact that America would just go away, right? It's like, what do you mean? Yeah. So even though history says no one stays on top forever, it's like, America's different, right? We started from an idea.
Yeah, we're special.
Founders, right? We're never going anywhere. But you make a case that there's nothing saying that that has to be the case, right?
See, you're talking about right there. That's the difference between being smart and being wise. A smart guy can go, well, look, America's got all these advantages. And a wise person goes, you know, everybody else with advantages, they didn't necessarily collapse, but they changed.
Right.
And so you're going to change somehow. And the idea is how to change into something better rather than worse, that has the principles that we hold dear, that every human being was created in God's image with rights and dignity and needs to be treated like that. And everyone should have a say in how the government, how they are governed, and everybody's rights should be protected. And that's what government should do. And those principles just, you know, those don't matter. How did they think America came to be?
Right.
It was a long struggle and a bloody one, with a lot of baggage from history. And, you know, I think we somehow take for granted what was handed to us.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about if you're going to be a real citizen, you've got to participate. You've got to continually protect and nurture your country because you can't put it on autopilot. This isn't normal.
You also can't defend it when you hate it.
Killing and stealing from each other.
Right. You also can't defend it when you hate it. You can't say it's systemically bad. It's you know, tarnished to its core. I hate this place, but I'm going to defend it from, you know, adversaries, foreign and domestic. How? You don't even like it.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. Look, you know, everybody's got the answer to be is to be an adult and to be wise about things and understand that people are flawed and they're always going to be flawed. Mm-hmm. But some people who are flawed are also have positive things. And, you know, tomorrow is new territory. I'm a believer that you can start over every day as a country and improve and become better. Because I've seen horrible countries, man. You know, when I was in Saudi Arabia during the Gulf War, I used to go out to buy things for the army. They give me $30,000, and I take a couple guys with rifles, gals actually with rifles, because that annoyed these Saudis. They didn't like that. And I would go out and I'd buy stuff, but I was down and you could just feel the fear. Everyone was always scared. They had their little religious police, they had their secret police. There's this atmosphere of fear. You know, I lived in the ruins of communism when I was in the Balkans and when I worked in Ukraine. And you can just see the damage that was done. And people just don't appreciate our country. And it's crazy.
You said you were living in the ruins of communism. I'm sorry. For some reason, I was like, in California?
Right.
I'm sorry. I knew you were in California. I thought you meant today.
Living in communism. No, I served in Kosovo for over a year. And I spent, I went back to Ukraine to train the Ukrainians four times when I was in the army. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Army never sends me to cool places. It was not, I never like go to Hawaii, go to Tahiti, wherever. Right. No, I'm always going to places like Ukraine, which, you know, interesting people, but not a garden spot. Hmm. Kosovo, are you kidding me? Nobody goes to Kosovo.
Right.
So it was, but it gave me an opportunity to see things that I think a lot of other Americans haven't. And I think that one reason I'm glad there's a lot of veterans going into Congress now, is because a lot of them have had a chance to see overseas mm-hmm. and see what's happened there and see how things are and appreciate what we have.
Right.
And understand how important it is to preserve the good stuff.
So, Samika, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say when you said you can't defend a country that you hate, I think that's the goal. I think that's exactly yeah. what they are doing intentionally. And especially with Black people, I think if you're so willing to hate the country, it's going to be easy for you to give up your American citizenship and trade it in for a global citizenship because you don't think America is fair. You don't like it. You hate it. And that's what they're pushing intentionally. And I think people, like you say, that are smart but aren't wise, they aren't paying attention. And for me, I don't want to lose this country. I very well feel like this is my country. I feel like my ancestors were born here. They fought on this land. Like, this is my home. So definitely, just like I defend my own home in the natural sense, I'm going to defend my home here in America. But when you have so many people that hate it, yeah, they're not going to defend it. And I think it's intentional that this division is being put out there.
Well, so look, I think they profit off it. I think they get power off it because they have nothing else to offer. And, you know, one of the things that I do like is so many people are just rejecting and just choosing not to live with that and say, no, I'm going to live my life like a normal person. I'm not going to hate my neighbor. Mm-hmm. I'm going to work hard. I'm going to take care of my family. You know, if duty calls, I'll go defend my country. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's how we felt in the military. I mean, that's, you know, it was all about the mission. And I was very proud to do it. And I don't think some of the military leaders today feel that way. I think some of the military leaders today have, don't understand what a military organization's purpose is. And that's going to get people killed. And I did get people killed in Afghanistan.
So a lot of the talk now though is about, and you write about what it would look like. That's one of the good things about at the end of a lot of these chapters, you know, you've written novels. So even though it's a nonfiction book,
yeah.
you spin these stories. So you talk about, you know, what happened in the past. You give a historical perspective, but you talk about something that's happening now. Then you say, well, what would it look like if it keeps going like that? And you have these little, yeah. you know, vignettes.
Little fictional things.
Right. And yeah. so one of the things you talk about is this civil war that people are talking about. So talk a bit about that, about how, if you talk in the book about if it were to happen, what could be the spark? But do we really want that? Of course not.
No.
And even, you know, I can give you my opinion. I hear it a lot. And Will says the same thing often. It's just not going to happen. Not because people aren't partisan enough, because some people aren't motivated, haven't got the spark yet to actually fight. And if it did happen, it'd be so ugly because everybody's saying it's a race war, right? But it wouldn't be a race war. It's an ideological war, right?
No, so, it's totally an ideological war.
It's a race war, so that means that you would have the MAGA people on the same side of this, you know, hypothetical war as all of the people in academia, right? They'd be on the same side, right? Or I would be on the side with BLM. It doesn't make sense.
Look, when I talk about civil war stuff, I talk about, you know, going outside of regular politics, using force outside of it to get your power. And you can see a little bit of that happening when somebody says, well, we need to go get in the face of these judges who voted the wrong way. So you're not using politics to influence, you're using intimidation. Mm-hmm. So now they're okaying to go outside of politics, which is the threshold mistake. Now, if it's okay to get somebody's in somebody's face, is it okay to slap them? If yeah. not, why not? And if it is okay to slap them, why is it not okay to shoot them? Mm-hmm. Where's that moral guard rail?
Right.
And how do you explain it? And of course, you can't, because there isn't one. So we have to reject going outside of politics. Now, keep in mind, America has had low-grade insurgencies in the past. And even in the 70s, we had The Weather Underground.
Mm-hmm.
Symbionese Liberation Army. These groups, and it became a law enforcement thing, but they were killing people.
Blowing up restaurants, yeah.
Blowing up stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was suppressed. So it is not a crazy notion.
Right.
The idea of the Civil War being Gettysburg 2, the sequel, is, you know, that is far-fetched. It is not necessarily far-fetched that you have some armed people trying to do things right. to change the power system, which we have to reject utterly. I do talk about, you know, look, I'm a strong believer that every American should have firearms. Every citizen should be armed. Very strong belief. But the question is, why do you believe that? What would you do with the guy? Are you going to shoot somebody because he passes a law you don't like?
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not what it's for. The rejecting the system and using violence is something that is so far down the road.
Right.
Where you,
but you talk
where
about
you
the importance of the threat, right? You say the threat has to be there.
Oh, the threat. Well, yeah, I think it has to be even more than a threat. I think you have to have no ability to change things through the elections. Not just I keep losing, and right. it's frustrating to lose. But you know, it has to be a system where you have no say, where you have no judicial relief, where you have no other means of exercising your rights under the Constitution to get what you want. Civil war or violence is never okay just because you didn't get what you wanted. It would have to be an abandonment of absolutely every basic principle. And I think that's very, very far off. Some people are like, we're on the edge of violence. Not in a systemic way. Okay. There are going to be idiots out there, who will use violence. We saw that with the Antifa guys.
Right.
But as far as major violence, I think it's unlikely. I wanted to show what it looks like in the book, because right. I think there's some people who are a little frivolous about it. Right. They don't take it serious.
They think it won't be a big deal, right?
Yeah. Right. A lot of these guys have never been in a fist fight. Right. You know why I don't fight when I can help it? Because it hurts to get punched. And I don't want
and
to
I
get
don't like
punched
it.
Anymore. I've been punched. I don't like it. And I don't particularly enjoy punching other people. I don't want to hurt anybody. And I certainly don't want to be hurt. That being said, if I have to do what I have to do, I have to do what I have to do. I don't want, you know, especially people on my own side being unwise and blabbering about, oh, we've got to, you know, we got to grab our guns and do stuff.
Right.
We're nowhere near that.
Right.
Yes, you have to have them for the theoretical possibility of it. I think right. if you're unarmed, you're not a citizen. If right. you're unarmed, you're vulnerable to every lunatic, creep, weirdo, thug, murderer, mob
really?
Out there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I you know, I remember how scared everybody was. I was on patrol in the Los Angeles riots with the California Guard. And, you know, citizens were like, oh, thank gosh you're here. I remember very clearly one lady actually thanking the soldiers because we cleared out a park and it was the first time her kids could play there. The LAPD refused to do anything. And while we were on the streets, that could happen. But these were disarmed people. These were not people able to go alter things. They couldn't depend on government. They couldn't depend on themselves. And at least not the government until we showed up. And we were a different part of the government.
Right.
I mean, I think in a lot of ways, I grew up in a very sheltered life. And I, you know, living in the suburbs. It really showed me that everything is not stable, that human nature exists and things can go off the rails quickly. So we've got to be prepared for that.
But look, so we both agree that that's pretty far off. But you talk about that there's a cocktail and there's a mix that moves you in that direction. So, Shamika, what do you see if you look at now the things that could possibly move us further down the road? So obviously, like he said, losing is not enough. But you have to lose and feel that you don't have an opportunity to win because the playing field is not level. Or you got to feel that the people in power whose job it is to protect you aren't protecting you. You have to feel that that the government is in some ways against you. A lot of these kind of really extreme things. But some people are feeling these ways now, right?
Yeah, I was actually doing a self-assessment when he said, I don't want to punch anyone. I was thinking, well, I do. And if it comes to my kids, I would snap someone's neck and then chew their face off. You know, but I feel glad or hopeful that you, Kurt, especially being in the military and having seen so many things around the world, that you feel like we're not that close. Because I've already been like seeing, if this breaks out, whose house am I going to get to? Who's more likely to keep me safe? Who has all the guns and the ammunition? I have literally been thinking about these things in my head. If a civil war breaks out, I'm not going to be with Tyrone. Tyrone shoots and shoots the wrong person. I want to be with Billy Bob that started shooting when he was five. That's the side I want to be on. So I'm glad that you think we are far from it, because I have spent time thinking about what happens if this breaks out anytime soon.
Well, I think it's important to think about it, because it makes you a more serious person. Because you're gonna be more, you're not gonna be talking like a fool about, oh, I want to go hurt people. I get frustrated. There are some people that I'd be tempted to slap around a bit, but that ain't the answer. Okay, that's just catering to my emotions,
Right.
and that's not the smart game. If something goes off, that's a whole different story. But our job is to make sure it doesn't go off. Look, we already have. We've got the answer. And the answer is to do what the Constitution says and to protect all the rights of the individual to their civil rights and protect their ability to participate in the government. And I mean, it ain't that hard.
Right.
For
And
some, they
first
feel.
off,
Well,
Because
here's the
they feel
thing.
like the Constitution is racist. We need to get rid of it.
Let's
And that's my frustration.
But
Like,
Shamika,
well,
here's
that's
the
crazy
thing.
talk.
So
Yeah,
can
they're just still, I mean, every dictator's got a constitution. Most of them are like 200 amendments long. And they just don't get, and at the end of the day, you can't speak freely, you can't worship how you want, cops can drag you away anytime they want to do it. The goal is to make our short and direct constitution effective and to
Right.
demand that, and
Right.
demand that for everybody. And if you don't do that, you're not going to get it, because human nature is always going to try and veer people off. We've got
Right.
to be, we have to be actively pro-constitution. We have to be actively pro-freedom. You can't just be, you can't sit on the sidelines. You have to demand it.
So
And
to that point, in the book you write about, obviously being a conservative, you write about the GOP people and you write about these different types, right? You know, from the establishment to this person to, on down the line. And you say, in order to get what Shamika needs and what you want from a constitution of somebody who's going to effectively, administer the constitution, you need someone who, as you say, is conservative woke, right? Woke but
yes.
conservative woke, right? And you go through the process of who those parties would be, what that type would be. So what do you think happens? I mean, in the field, who runs, whether Trump runs or doesn't run, that kind of thing. It's like, who is the guy? If you look at it now, I mean, you wrote the book, I would assume, 6 months, a year ago. So you were getting close to now, but now you got a few more months after that.
I have.
So who is the person that can, as you say in your chapter, wave the banner? Who's going to carry the banner?
Look, I think Donald Trump is likely to run again. Has he learned some of his lessons? Because
How is that?
I like Donald Trump, but look, politicians to me are expendable. It's all, what have you done for me lately? I want to know, have you learned something about personnel? Are you going to make this all about your personal beefs? Because I
Right,
don't care
payback.
about those. Are you do you understand what we have to achieve and accomplish? I don't know those questions. That's why I want to have a primary, because I want all of us to have a vote on it. I like voting. I like when people get together and make a decision. And then, okay, that's fine. Now I've been heard. I didn't win this time, or maybe I did win. Now we're all now we know which way we're going to go. I like Ron DeSantis a lot. I think he's a very smart guy. I think he is conservative woke. I think he understands the nature of our opponents. And he gets their weaknesses, and he doesn't let them bully him. I think there are some other candidates. Tom Cotton, I think he's a little young. Tim Scott, I think he's very nice. I love Tim Scott. I would love him as a neighbor.
He's so nice.
I keep saying I could talk him into driving me to the airport at 5:30 in the morning because he's a nice guy. Do we need a nice guy today?
Probably not.
Who else? Mike Pompeo. I don't even know what's up with Mike Pompeo. I like him. He was a cavalry officer in the military. That's okay.
Just because he started slimming down.
I want some of his weight loss, Ken. So I'm looking a little chunky. Nikki Haley, she's just establishment. I don't like her much. I don't know who else, but I'm,
The GOP, as we beat up on the left, the GOP, like, yeah, unlike the left, which is lost, which is true. They say, but we got a deep bench. But do you know, a lot of them seem like the Mitt Romney BLM type.
I think they don't do a good job, or at least wouldn't do an awful job.
Right. But that's true, but they're not fighters.
Yeah, I know.
I don't mean to be crazy like Trump, but you can't be weak.
You're right. They're not the person for the moment. Look, I would love to have a country that is so stable and so prosperous that you can have a nice guy like a Tim Scott be president because he doesn't have to fight all the time. All he has to do is not screw up.
Right.
And I think that would be great, but we're not there. We need somebody who understands the other side is in it for keeps and in it for real.
Yes.
And if we don't understand that, I think we're going to get played out. And I don't want that. I have no intention of giving up what this country is about.
Right.
None.
And so I got to say, too, the book, in addition to obviously people on the left won't like it because it is what it is. But it's also, I mean, and I've seen you speak before. And you're like, so you write the way I see you when you speak. So it's funny and it's sarcastic like me and it's in your face. And so I just want to read one thing here because it made me laugh. There were several things, you know, poor Brittany in Chicago. And you got to read the book just to find out what happens to Brittany. It's a sad affair. But so at the end, he's talking about he finds the conservative woke president and we elect him. And so he's talking about what happens, you know, what the president's doing at the beginning of his first days. And it's the inauguration. And right after being sworn in, Justice Roberts, who's not a fan of him, they're not a fan of each other, offers his hand and the 47th president of the United States shook it. It was limp. So he writes when he talks about, you want to know what it looks like if the red government is run by the reds and the blues are the rebels? This is what it looked like. And he'll write a little vignette about that. The other side. So get the book to find out how civilizations are built, how they fall and how they can come back. And hopefully America is not going to completely fall. But the last thing you also say, though, is you say that it doesn't mean it falls like it goes away. It can just look different. Right. So yeah. It still has the same flag and it has a Senate.
Yeah.
But it just has a different feel. Something about it is different, right?
Yeah, like the Roman Empire. There was a Roman kingdom, then the Roman Republic, where everybody, you know, the Senate and Caesar and everything. Then Caesar came along, and then you had the Roman Empire. And if you were start out in the Roman Republic and went to Roman Empire, you know, your life isn't going to seem that different. But what Rome is about has changed completely. Even though everything looks the same and feels the same. So we could have a country that looks like America, but it doesn't have what made America America. And, you know, that may not be stronger. That could be a lot weaker. Right. And, you know, down the road, you know, after 476, there was no Western Roman Empire.
Right.
It was gone. And even then people didn't, you know, if you were, you know, working in the field, as a farmer in Italy, you probably didn't really notice until the barbarians showed up. Then you notice.
Right. And it was too late. So any last thought on both the country or the book, either one?
I'm an optimist. I don't like pessimism. I don't buy it. It annoys me. It's not my nature. I'm very I always think we will do better and we can do better.
So you believe in Biden. You got good hopes for the rest of the Biden administration.
I got good hopes we're gonna
I'm an optimist, not crazy.
I think we're gonna beat him in 2022. Look, there's a lot of things that give me hope for the future, but the biggest one is I can't see losing to these people. Most of them are just, you know, a lot of them are weirdos. A lot of them are crooks. A lot of them are just dumb. They're all unwise. I can't imagine losing. I'm just a competitive guy, I guess. I can't imagine losing to these people. How can I tell myself they're going to beat me? We got the greatest country that's ever existed, the greatest constitution that's ever existed. You know, I we're set up for success. All we got to do is be successful.
That's it. He is Kirk Schlichter. He's a senior columnist at Town Hall, trial lawyer, and author of the new book, We'll Be Back, The Fall and Rise of America. Kirk, thank you for joining.
Hey, thank you guys. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. To say, God bless the U.S. of A, land of the free and a home of the brave. God get all of the praise. I got a country to save, 'cause I'm Patriot J and I'm saving a day.